Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Clash. So on Monday, we use the Bible to prove that dancing isn't the devil's work, but tractor jousting might be. And today, we're off on holiday with baby and family to discover that it's absolutely true. Staff at hotel resorts get up to all sorts behind closed doors while you're at the breakfast buffet. From 1987, it's Dirty Dancing.
She thought it would be just another summer vacation.
Who's that?
Oh, them. They're the dance people.
But it turns out to be the time of her life.
Watch me now!
I can't even do the merengue.
He teaches her what she can do.
We'll have a winner at the end of the show, but which film will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. Never put a baby in the corner. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
Very quickly, if you haven't subscribed to us, please do. We're at Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you could give us a rating review, it's very much appreciated. And also do follow us on Twitter at ClashPod and indeed on Instagram at ClashPod as well. Thank you very much. Now, if you do have the time to give us a review, the wonderful Chris Tilley, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly, might end up reading it out on the show like this.
This review comes from Miss VGW, who says, "Awesome. Bingeable podcast hosted by two hilarious kids and their dad, Chris." So that's an excellent review because it's very brief and it nearly gets 5 stars for mentioning me by name, but I have to dock it a star for implying that I'm not hilarious, which I think it does.
Oh, all right, Dad. Docking a star. Lovely stuff. Thank you for that review. Right. Part two of Footloose versus Dirty Dancing. Chris's choices. Chris, remind us why.
Because I fancy finding out why Dirty Dancing is liked by people. Is that why?
Mm. Yes, I think so. That was similar to what you said on Monday. That'll do. So on Monday, I loosened my feet with Footloose. And today, Victoria is coming out of the corner to show us her filthy moves in Dirty Dancing.
I'm so excited. Take
us on a journey.
The Houseman family, mum, dad, a girl so wide-eyed she's actually called Baby, and some girl who looks nothing like Baby but is her sister Lisa, take a wholesome vacation at Kellerman's Resort. Baby encounters the staff indulging in some dirty dancing, aka the vertical expression of a horizontal desire, or in this case, just the vertical doing of something you can also do horizontally. Despite her butter wouldn't melt bullshit, Baby swindles the love of her life, her dad, out of a substantial sum of money to procure a backstreet abortion for Penny, her main rival for the affections of smoking hot dance teacher Johnny, so that Johnny is forced to spend the entirety of Act 2 in a series of dance montages, where Baby learns to mambo and more, from spaghetti arms to ticklish arms to having sex with Johnny arms. But this film is really about a seismic moment of change in the cultural history of the USA. With Johnny and Penny representing the impending freedom of the 60s, collective action, control over your sexual and reproductive health, and more importantly, sexy dancing. Baby is the bridge between these worlds, besotted by her dad at the same time as she wrests power from him, exemplified by her and Johnny finally smashing that mambo in a talent show where Johnny lifts Baby high in front of her dad, signalling to the old guard, this is our world now, Pops, a change is going to come. But more importantly, sexy dancing. The end.
Very good.
Wow. Thank you.
That Did you say she journey. Has sex with Johnny's arms?
No.
I didn't see that scene.
I didn't understand that bit either. I was like, did I watch the same film? And how
no,
does
because
one?
When she goes to have sex with him, she's like, oh, let's have a dance. It's a very uncomfortable scene, which we'll get to. She's like, oh, let's have a dance. And then she puts her arms around him and then they have sex. So that's okay. The progression.
Okay.
Well, anyway. So Alex, you've never seen this. Shall we just clear that off? You've never seen it. You hate dancing. You hate all joy. Whatever.
Well, yes, that's partially. I've never seen this movie. This was a first watch for me, but I have seen Dirty Dancing 2 Havana Nights.
Okay. So, an interesting way into the world.
if by interesting you mean awful, then
the most beloved entry in the series.
No, I will say this, though. This was a first watch for me. What a cracking movie. I bloody love this movie, and I didn't expect to be saying that on this show. I had had some wine when I watched this film, but I'd also had wine when I watched Footloose, so you can remove the wine variable as a reason for my enjoyment of Dirty Dancing.
Oh, how lovely. Oh, that's good. Chris, what about you?
Well, I'm not going to spoil how I feel about this film now at this point in the podcast, because obviously
knew,
we wait until
I
the end
it.
Of the
yep,
podcast
I knew
to do
you'd
this.
Have a problem with that. I knew you'd pick me up on that. It's like, have you had an opinion in your histories with this movie section? Because that is not how that section works.
It's less an opinion, more a verdict, I think you gave. But anyway, Charlotte Page has a lot to answer for. She was a friend of mine when I was at primary school, and I used to go to her house, and every day she'd put on Grease and Dirty Dancing.
Oh my God.
And I did not enjoy either film as a child. But also Dirty Dancing was weird when I was like 9, 10. It felt quite dangerous, and I didn't really understand what was happening or the emotions that were being expressed. And I think it's what I learned, how I learned what an abortion was by watching this film. And it's just, I don't know, it was weird for, it's not a film aimed at a 10-year-old boy. That's what I'll say about Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, I mean, my history is really similar. So I had I've been so excited to talk about this film for a while because I do feel quite an emotional attachment to it. So I would have been probably about 11 or 12 because it was my friend when I was first at secondary school, and her mum loved this film. And I loved my friend's family because in that way, you know, when you're very young, well, when you come from a very secure, safe, loving household, what you do as an 11 or 12 year old is decide you hate that household and you love any family that is not like your own family. And my friend's family were really different from mine, and they would talk really openly about sex, but in an age appropriate way. But in my house, you know, it was quite a very secure house, but quite buttoned up, and we just did not talk about that sort of thing ever. So to go around to my friend's house where her mum would be watching Dirty Dancing and cackling away and rewinding bits where Johnny's got his top off and all the rest of it, I thought that was brilliant. And plus it's got abortion in it, which just blew my head off. Like, I still can't believe it's got abortion in it. And so anyway, my friend's mum was banging to this. We watched it again and again and again and listened to the soundtrack again and again. And it was just a crazy summer. You know how it goes.
Nope. No point of reference for any of that. But okay, that was your story and I liked it.
Okay, fine. So let's do the background. A lot of this is from a New York Times article from, I can't remember when, called Fairy Tale Without an Ending by Anne Coulson. So this film belongs to the writer Eleanor Bergstein because it's quite an autobiographical tale. So she spent summers in a resort in the Catskills. She was what she called a mambo queen. I don't quite know what that means, but I imagine it means she won a competition or two for doing a mambo. She turned down to script writing, and she had a film called It's My Turn, which I haven't seen. But apparently there was an erotic dance scene in it and it got cut. And so that made her think maybe I could do a more extensive story around erotic dancing, which she called Dirty Dancing. She wrote the script. It went out with a cassette tape from her own 45s to make the soundtrack, which I think is it's brilliant because it works so well in this film, but the soundtrack is amazing.
Yeah. It's an incredible, I mean, if you like the soundtrack to Footloose, it puts that to shame. This soundtrack is probably one of the greatest movie soundtracks in the history of movie soundtracks.
Exactly. But it wasn't quite a smooth route to the screen. So it was developed at MGM, then it was dropped. The producer, Linda Gottlieb, had a hard time placing it because everyone thought it was small and it was soft, and then it was picked up by Vestron Video, but they cut the budget in half. So they were just going to show it in cinemas for a weekend and then release it on video. So it was a really like belt and braces kind of production, according to Eleanor Bergstein.
Yeah, well, they didn't know what to do with it because Vestron Video made Chopping Mall, Blood Diner, and Slaughter High. So a period piece about love was not their bread and butter.
Yeah. Mm. They did an article in The Guardian in 2006, I think around when the stage version was being released, with Eleanor Bergstein to see how she was feeling. Because she didn't do, I don't think she did another film after this, but she sort of, you know, this is her story and she was very much involved in the stage production. So does she need to do anything else? And she said that Vestron had a sponsor for the film, but it was an acne cream. And she was appalled by it because she's trying to get teenage boys and girls to come and see the film. But then the acne cream company saw the film and said it wasn't prepared to sponsor a film that featured a coat hanger abortion. So they were out.
Yeah. It was Clearasil. It was Clearasil with the actual company. Yeah. They were all up for it until the filmmakers refused to take out the abortion subplot, which is kind of not really a subplot. It's a massive part of the film. Can you take that out and not have a movie? Not really. No.
I mean, I've got to say, I've written a film with an abortion scene in it, and this was 2 years ago, and it went round to a few companies to develop it, and we did not have an easy time with that. We were asked if we could get rid of it because it's quite a low budget affair, and so everyone's thinking Netflix, and Netflix is thinking China and all the rest of it, and it's just if you can take it out, they would rather you took it out at that time. I don't know if it would be different now, but the fact that it's in there, I just think it floors me. It's amazing.
Well, it's the inciting incident in the most romantic and the sexiest film of the 80s is a botched abortion. That's mental.
It is absolutely mental.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. So directed by Emil Ardalin, he'd won an Oscar for a documentary about ballet dancer Jacques d'Amboise. And so stars Patrick Swayze, Jennifer Grey. No one knows who these people are apart from, I mean, I knew Jennifer Grey from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but because I come to this, I was 11 years old, she was like a megastar to me because she'd been in Dirty Dancing. But at the time, she was a relative unknown, and so was Patrick Swayze.
The only thing I have to add to that is you mentioned, obviously, this is Eleanor Bergstein's story, and Baby was, in fact, one of her nicknames. And she said when she was coming up with the characters, a lot of them were inspired by people she used to know where she lived. And she said she couldn't really contact them for help because my old partners are either in jail or out on parole. It was a very rough neighbourhood.
And fun fact, but Chris Tilley will know this, it's the first film ever to sell 1 million copies on video. That's a good fact.
Good fact. I like the fact that Billy Zane very nearly played Johnny Castle.
Did he?
Yeah. Like all Zanes, he couldn't dance though. That was the problem.
Yeah. You can see his screen test, and it's very different to Patrick Swayze's. Because Eleanor Bergstein had a real say in who played that role, and she's in every interview I saw with her, she said her thing was he had to have hooded eyes. So she was going through photos of actors in Hollywood and picking the ones that had hooded eyes. She said, not love me eyes like John Travolta, but hooded eyes. And that's what Patrick Swayze had. I don't even know what that means. What does that mean, Vicky?
It's come back to bed eyes. It's not go to bed, come back to bed. Is that not the sexiest thing you've ever heard in your life? If someone's got those eyes and those eyes are saying come back to bed. Oh, my God. It says a lot.
He nearly didn't do it, did he, Patrick Swayze? Because his CV at this point, he'd got a knee injury from his dancing career, and the resume that went out to people interested in him for a role said no dancing on it because of his injury. But he read the script and he was like, screw it, I'm still going to do it with my knee injury because I think it's a great role.
Yeah, and you can see some of the behind-the-scenes footage, particularly the finale, and he is in absolute agony.
Really?
It's amazing he pulls off the jump off the stage at the end, because when you see the takes of that didn't go well, it's because he just can barely stand on that leg. So he did a fine job.
He did. There's an interview that I was watching with him where he talks about just not only that injury, but the pain that comes with some of the dancing in the film, just rehearsing and doing it over and over again. It sounds horrific. You watch these dances, you go, sexy, sexy. But in reality, owie, owie, they were really painful. I mean, sexy, sexy can also be owie, owie in real life, I guess.
Sure, why not?
If you're doing it wrong, you know. Or if you're doing it right. Depends on what you like. Oh. We're a very inclusive podcast, is what I'm saying. Very, very inclusive. Are you going to mention? I think Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey did not get on at points.
No, they didn't
in the film. Which is when you watch it, you can't believe that. But there's a line where from his autobiography, Patrick Swayze says, "We did have a few moments of friction where we were tired or after a long day of shooting. She seemed particularly emotional, sometimes bursting into tears if someone criticized her. Other times, she slipped into silly moods, forcing us to do scenes over and over again because she'd just start laughing."
Yeah, the ticklish arms thing is meant to be like, is said to be like the perfect example of that. So he's doing the thing where he sort of, you know, where he moves his fingers down the underneath of her arm. She's a very ticklish spot. And it's part of the montage and she laughs three times and he looks exasperated, but he's meant to have been genuinely thoroughly pissed off by that point. Just to stop fucking laughing. Be a professional.
They talk about finding that on the edit cutting room floor. Because it was obviously not going to go in because it was like the scene where she'd messed up. So they were like, we're not using that. She's messed up. And then someone saw it and went, actually, this is brilliant. That's Kenny Ortega's favorite moment in the movie because it's so honest, which is kind of weird, though, because they're not acting. That's why it's honest. He's genuinely really pissed off with her for laughing.
Well, she got cast before him and then she told them she wouldn't work with him because of the experience they'd had on Red Dawn together. And so, but they, you know, that screen test, which we'll post on the Twitter, like you can see the magic there in the screen test. And they went to Swayze and said, look, we want you. She doesn't. You need to talk to her and figure this out. And they went off for 20 minutes, came back and sort of, they went off looking sad, came back smiling. Don't know what happened. And and he had the role, but yeah, it happened during the shoot as well. They fell out again and it wasn't working. And apparently Emil took them to one side and showed them that screen test and said, look, you can see the magic there. You haven't got it here. You guys need to figure this out. And obviously they did, but it's interesting that out of, you know, maybe borderline hatred came this real sort of hot romantic love as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And finally, this is obviously our second Patrick Swayze movie on the pod after Roadhouse. And hopefully at some point in the future, we'll do 2007's Canadian comedy, Christmas in Wonderland, in which he stars alongside Tim Curry. And that completes this week's obligatory Tim Curry reference. I found one. You love it, Chris. You love it. Yeah, right. You love it.
Let's talk about the film.
Great.
Let's talk about the film. Okay, so Danson is filthy, established by the opening, the credits at the open to the Ronettes' Be My Baby. That's all you need to know. Danson is absolutely filthy. Brilliant.
And how.
So the Housemans, nice family, nuclear family, go to Kellerman's and we are in for, it's the classic, one summer to change your life and a summer romance and all of that. Now, Kellerman's is very tame and safe. Baby goes to a merengue class. Not only can she not dance, she can't even really move side to side in time. And she loves her dad. So that's what we've set up straight away. When you think about this one summer to change your life and a summer romance, does it tap into anything in you two personally that makes you identify with that? Or is that just an alien concept to you? I'm not saying it's recognizable to me, but
100% for me, yeah. The summer of 1998, finishing my A levels, and that summer when you'd left school and it's a really long summer. But it was Dazed and Confused, because I watched Dazed and Confused at the start of that summer, and it was a summer spent drinking in parks. And I was like, every time we went out, everyone was quoting Dazed and Confused. So that was mine.
Yeah, but I mean, outside of film, like the idea of course.
It
just stretches out and yes. And there's a romance possibly, and it's a very
and
a cherished memory.
It's warm.
It's always warm. It's so ridiculous. I remember when I was growing up, when I was younger, I read somewhere like this silly aside that, you know, grown ups always think it's warmer when in their memories. And I was like, God, I'll never think that, because I'm from Blackburn and it's fucking freezing all the fucking time. And now in my memories of growing up in Blackburn, in the summer it was boiling. It was always boiling hot, and we were running through fields, and it's like that just can't be true. But it's just getting older. Isn't that disappointing that you just turn into your parents in that way, and you're like, yep, it was always roasting hot, wasn't? Anyway, that's me.
What are you talking about?
it doesn't matter. Anyway, let's get to my first favorite scene. Right. So
wait, was it or wasn't it hot in Blackburn? I'm confused.
It can't have been hot. It cannot have been hot because it's literally Blackburn.
Right.
But in my memory, it was always in the sort of mid-20s, and that just can't be true.
And our parents all think it's hot in Blackburn, or they don't know what the weather is in Blackburn. Boy, do they? I don't know if I've
what
ever.
I, mean I've, is
I haven't
ups,
talked to my mum about it. Yeah.
Ask her. Well, will you just ask her, please?
Right. Sure.
Alex. I've asked you a million times. Can you please ask your mum what she thought the weather was like in Blackburn in the early to mid 90s? Would you just do that
and,
for me, please?
And she's going to say what? It's
she's
roasting
gonna say
or not?
She's going to say about 24, 25.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll ask her. Whatever. Just get this out of the way. Anyway, here's our first important scene. I love this scene so much. It's so ridiculous. So Max Kellerman is talking to the waiters and he's like, you guys, you're Harvard educated. And so here we have the demarcation of the social classes. And then he literally says this line, which I can't believe it, but it's brilliant. And he goes, well, if it isn't the entertainment staff, when Patrick Swayze... And the entertainment staff walking, and I love that. Patrick Swayze is wearing sunglasses inside. He's got a leather jacket. He's not a college boy. And it's just, there we are. There is your social strata in four lines. The waiters are upper class. The entertainment staff are working class. Have fun with that. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, the problem I have with the scene is there's really no way back from this scene for Max Kellerman, who is kind of played as a reasonable nice guy. He's running a resort, but it's the bit where he's talking to the waiters and he says, don't forget to get with the daughters of the guests, even the dogs. Mm. And you're like, whoa. Yeah. I struggled to like him after he said that, and I think it's quite a troubling line for him. Yeah. It's a bit weird.
It speaks to my my willful selective memory with something like this. He says dogs, and I'm like, oh God, don't do that. And then just instantly forgot. I was like, oh, he's so lovely. Such a granddad. I forgave him.
The tap dancing duet goes some way to make me like him more than he does. Because a little known fact about me, that my biggest regret in life is never learning to be a tap dancer.
Are you serious?
Because you hate dancing.
But I think this is why. Because I went to one tap dancing lesson as a kid, and there were no other boys there, and I got the fear, and so I left, and I really wish I'd seen it through, because I love tap dancing. I think it's my favourite kind of dancing. It's the only dancing I'll tolerate.
Okay.
There you go, Gary. You'll get to tap dance with Alex Zane at our first live show.
I forgot. Gary, pick a tap dance for us.
You could tap dance now, though, if you wanted to, after coronavirus. Of course you can. Why not? Why not go to a tap lesson?
I think it should have been lockdown. That should have been your lockdown, Alex.
Can you imagine if when we started, you bounded across to us?
Tap dance into the studio.
That would be amazing.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Let's hope there's another lockdown and I'll do it.
So we see Johnny and Penny Mambo. Saucy, great. Neil, evil grandson, will come back to him and he's like showing off Waltzell dance lessons. It bloody will, Neil, and you'll see. But the important point we're getting to is that Baby wins a chicken, which I'd forgotten. That's stupid.
I wrote that down. I was was like, this is the movie in which someone takes part in a magic show and as a result of that is presented with a chicken.
Yeah, and what does she do with the chicken? Because cut two, she's going to the do not pass this point because it's for the staff. Where's the chicken? It's just gone. Just thrown the chicken in the lake, probably. So the very, very, very memorable, important scene. Johnny's cousin Billy is carrying some watermelons. Baby is going to help him. She goes up to the staff quarters and she sees some dirty dancing. Billy explains they can't dance like that in the main house, so where else are they going to do it? They can't just not dance. They have to dance, right? It's that important. But this scene is important to me because the age at which I saw it, I had Baby's reaction. So I was like, what are they doing? Like, what is that? I don't know what that is. Will I do that one day? Maybe.
Her reaction is priceless as well. Yeah. Her face when that door opens is just wonderful. She's great. Again, Jennifer Grey is fantastic in this movie. Bearing in mind, I hadn't seen Red Dawn, so I still haven't seen Red Dawn, which means I've never seen Jennifer Grey in cinema. This is my first experience of Jennifer Grey, and I didn't know what to expect, having not seen this movie before. And she is such a brilliant comic actress. She's got some wonderful moments in this.
I feel like Titanic was trying to use a little bit of this magic in that scene where Kate Winslet first sees the poor people below deck having fun and dancing. It's that moment of seeing how the other half live below deck. And it is like stepping into a parallel universe. In terms of that dirty dancing, Kenny Ortega, who we mentioned on the last episode, and Hocus Pocus episode, who choreographed this, he talks about it. He said dirty dancing had rules, certain moves in a certain space. He describes it, these are different quotes I got from him, but he describes it as soul dancing with a partner plus mambo and Cuban motion. There's street dancing, there's bending and grinding, and what he calls having conversations with your bodies.
Oh, beautiful. And sexy. More to the point.
And this is the thing. This is why this film surprised me, because I walked into it going, I can't believe I'm having to watch this film. I can't believe this. I've avoided this film for like 30 years. Well done me. And now I'm having to watch it. This is really good. Like the choreography, like the way they dance is, I've never seen it on film before. I've never seen anyone dancing like the dancing that takes place in this film. And it is genuinely very sexy. This film began to soften my heart to dancing.
Yeah, and also because you are a baby, even if you're not 12 when you see that, because she's so astonished. But also it hits those other points as well that are just extremely relatable. So Johnny Castle is the hottest guy in the room by a long way. And she's there on the sidelines and she's like, he's not going to talk to me. He's not going to talk to me. Oh, shit, he is talking to me. And she's just like, oh, I carried a watermelon. And it's a stupid line and it probably shouldn't have as much love as it does. But that moment of like, why have I just said that? And I don't like the fact that she repeats it to sort of I've said a stupid thing. It's like, we know you said a stupid thing because you just said you carried a watermelon. Yeah. But it's that everyone's got a memory like that. Everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I love the way him and Penny just explode into that room as well. Even before that, like he's the king of this place. I mean, he's the king of the other place until someone tells him what to do. And then here, no one tells Johnny what to do. And so it's just what's impressive is how he manages to be so masculine and feminine at the same time. I don't know how he does it, Swayze, but it's a sight to behold when his hips are swiveling. And literally, I feel like just by looking at her, she turns into a woman.
Steady on, Chris. Bloody hell. That is powerful stuff. I'm fanning myself. My God. Just someone look at me like that. Christ.
And then he walks away from her, doesn't he? There's a bit of a dry hump and then he's off.
Yeah. Fuck up.
Mean / keen.
Yeah. And that's the best way. Always the best way. Okay. So actually, let's have a break and then we'll talk about abortion.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This week at Sukarnov.
Over on My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson, comedy legend Ian Stone is choosing what he'd put on his list of personal wonders of the world. Along the way, he tells a story of the first time he ever did stand-up, and it wasn't exactly by choice.
My friends, who unbelievably remained my friends after this, put me down secretly for the open mic spot. I mean, I went on. I didn't know what to say. I stood there. I'd never been on a stage before. Well, actually, I'd done a school play once, but I was playing... it was some biblical thing. I can't even remember, but...
You went into your I Am Joseph, is there room in your inn routine.
Give me my coloured coat. Yeah, that didn't work.
Meanwhile, these self-care club ladies are keen to figure out why so many women often find themselves saying sorry for just about anything.
I think that it is such a fine line between over-apologising unnecessarily and actually standing up and saying, I'm sorry for this. I'm sorry if you've been uncomfortable in any way that's been caused by me. And I think that's a sign of strength, isn't it? To be able to apologise for yourself, but not at the cost of your self-esteem.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
We learn that Penny is pregnant, which in this film means that everyone is going to get fired, which I don't quite understand, but also fine.
They jump through a lot of hoops to set this up, don't they? Of everyone's going to get fired, everyone's going to lose all their money if they miss one dance on a particular day, and there's a travelling abortion doctor who's in town for one day. Well, the whole thing sounds ridiculous, but they sell it enough that you go with it.
Yeah, and Robbie won't help. So Robbie is the waiter, one of the waiters, is going to turn out to be our baddie. And he's the one who is the father of this baby, but he's not sure. He says he's not sure, and he's not going to help her. But Robbie is reading The Fountainhead. So in this movie, he's the villain. So have you read The Fountainhead? Alex, it's right up your street.
Is it about the architect?
Yeah.
No, I've...
But basically, individualism versus collectivism. And so the political shift of the 60s, what I'm saying is this film is like a lens on the political shift of the 60s, because the 60s, after the Civil Rights Act would be signed in 64, this takes place in 63, and we're moving into a period where collective action replaced individualism for a while, and then it was replaced again in the 80s by like hyper-consumerism and individualism. And I don't think I'm reading that into this film. Robbie goes, I'm a dick, and then shows the fountainhead. So that's this film's take on that shift at that time, I would say.
100%.
So Penny needs an abortion. But this is the thing. When I was 12, I was like, Penny needs an abortion. Okay, what's the problem? It's like, oh, it's fucking illegal. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
There's a bit of on the nose. There's a bit of an on the nose exchange between Penny and Baby just to show Baby's privilege, which I was like, I don't know that you'd say that. When Penny says, my dad kicked me out when I was 16, and Baby literally goes, I envy you. What's that response?
Weird things to say. Yeah.
She asked her dad for $250, which in today's money, that's $2,000. No questions asked. I think if I'd asked my dad for £2,000, no question asked, I think he'd tell me to bugger off.
But yeah, I agree with you. But I think this scene then is again about the paternalism of daddy's generation. He doesn't suspect Baby is capable of deceit or of anything untoward. And so that works as well in terms of a father-daughter dynamic, especially about how naive she is. But equally, the paternalism of the 40s, 50s did not see the 60s come in, kind of thing, couldn't believe it when it was happening and resisted it. And that's why that scene plays out like that, where he's like, of course, because in his eyes, what's she going to do? It doesn't matter what she does with it because it won't be anything bad.
He even says, it's not illegal, is it? And then goes, I can't believe I even asked that. Of course it's not.
Yeah, but he'll see. He'll find out.
What an idiot, yeah.
So this means that Baby, like you say, Chris, it's ridiculous that Penny and Johnny were due at the Shelton on Thursday and now they can't go. So someone's got to go and there's a room full of professional dancers, but they can't go. So Baby's got to go. And so we get a lot of dance montages. But the thing is...
Oh, come on, though. That dance montage, that train... That is... it might even usurp it. That might be the greatest training montage since Rocky IV. It is... incredible. Bit on the bridge where she keeps beating herself up because she keeps getting it wrong. I was in stitches.
Did you like that?
So
because
funny.
you get a lot of close-ups of feet in that scene, Alex.
I can deal with feet. They're not bare feet though, as far as I remember.
I'm afraid.
What?
On the log, they're bare feet, mate.
And that is why you shouldn't drink wine, children.
But this is one of the moments where they fell out because Jennifer Grey didn't want to go on that log. She thought it was dangerous because there wasn't anything protective underneath. And Swayze...
It is bloody dangerous. I couldn't believe it.
Swayze's obviously quite a macho guy in real life. The way they talk about him, he's quite competitive and he insisted she'd come out there and she wouldn't. And so he ended up doing a lot of it on his own. And he fell and injured himself and it delayed the shoot. So more fool him. More fool him.
I mean, I watched Footloose after I watched this, and my notes are, is there anything better than a dance montage? And it turns out there is, because this montage is better than the Footloose montages. But yeah, I love all of this. I don't mind that there's so much dancing in this film and a lot of montages. I just think it just adds to it. I don't miss the sort of the beats of the story. And also, Baby, you know, we have to show that she's changing, literally. So gone are the cardigans and culottes, and she's got this smoking hot body top on and these cut-off shorts. So she's like, she's changing as a person. So we've got 2 days to go. She's getting better, but she's freaked out by the lift. That is important. We will come back to that.
Mm. It's a good montage because as the montage goes on, the clothes come off. They start fully clothed at the start of the montage, and by the end, they're pretty much naked.
Yeah,
like a good podcast.
I didn't want to say this on Monday's show, but it was so hot in my office that I did it topless. Genuinely, I should have saved it for this show because Patrick Swayze spends about 90% of this movie without a top on. So yeah. I should have done it now.
I think he's a bit out of order in a couple of those scenes where he's having a go at her for not making eye contact with him, and he's got his shirt off. Put your shirt on if you want her to look in your eyes.
What is she supposed to do?
Why would you? Why would you look at the eyes when the nipples are there? You look at the nipples.
Do you?
I find nipples are the eyes of the chest.
Getting weirdo.
That's really funny.
Get him off.
Anyway, back to the politics. Penny is stealing herself for her abortion, and she's scared, and she should be, because it's the 60s, and an abortion then was a hot bath and a fucking sharp stick, and out you went. But Baby, to show how great Baby is just banging on about the dance. So Penny's like dressing her, and Penny's like, I'm going for an abortion tonight, and I'm fucking terrified. She's like, do you think I'll do the lift? It's like, come on, like, help her out a little bit, but you've paid for it. And so I do think that she wants a bit of admiration for having paid for this procedure, and she isn't really Penny's friend because she's not listening to Penny's fears. But anyway, the show goes on. I think Jennifer Grey does a brilliant job here of being half a good dancer. Do you not think? So she doesn't do the lift, but she does the rest of the dance, and she's got like her full face of makeup and she looks terrified, but she does half good dancing.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, I think her dance journey throughout the film is very well judged. The first time in the first Dirty Dancing scene with Swayze, when she's just sort of thrusting back and forth, is really funny.
It's so good. Yeah.
It's so funny. And then she gets better and better. And you're right, she's good enough, but she leaves a lot left so that the finale really works.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and what I didn't realise, obviously this was my first watch of the movie, as I keep saying, but the Schumachers are in the audience at the Sheldrake Hotel, which is kind of important later on. The older couple, who they notice and they think they've seen her. I didn't really get this at the time, but that obviously comes back into play when there's the accusation of the stolen wallet.
Well, you mentioned the Schumachers. Would you like to, it's a good opportunity for you to do your Joel Schumacher impression again, Alex.
it's inappropriate right now, but it is a very good impression of American
New Yorker, born and bred New Yorker Joel Schumacher.
Thanks for bringing that up. We're not one of my finer moments.
Literally got it in my notes.
So Penny's in a bad way after her abortion. Weirdly, Billy says, "I could hear her screaming down the hall." Which, if that doesn't put you off sex forever, I don't know what will. I mean, that to me, I think about that a lot. Like, she's lucid, but she's not. And so, Baby has to get her dad, and her dad comes to the rescue.
It's a well-written film. Like, there's some very, very concise dialogue that really paints a picture. I thought a fold-out table and a dirty knife was very effective. It really paints a picture visually when they say that's what the doctor was. He had a fold-out table and a dirty knife, and you're like, ouch.
Ouch, yes. So Daddy is dragged... What is Daddy's name?
Jerry Orbach's the actor.
Jake Houseman. Jake. His name's Jake. You know, like Gerard Butler's character in Geostorm, Jake.
Okay. He does help, and I think the film does a really good job of not saying, oh, isn't he a good guy for helping? Because Daddy's position, Daddy's privilege is his skills and his medical expertise. And he does help, but he isn't like, oh, I'm, you know, I expect praise for that. But he knows he's being dragged into the new world. That's the politics. And he'll get on board with it, but he can't help berating his daughter who's dragged him into this world. So he's really mean to her. And he's like, take that stuff off your face, which is a horrible thing to say to your daughter. And she has not even got that much makeup on and all the rest of it. And he doesn't, you know, their relationship is really loving and he treats her like a child. And so to say that to her, like, take that stuff off your face is a really adult thing to say to her, and it's very hurtful.
Yeah. This whole scene, though, when the father, Jake, asks who is responsible for Penny, and Patrick Swayze says, I am. I don't like the fact that this whole second half of the movie and the dad's dislike of Patrick, or at least part of it, is based on a misunderstanding.
Yeah, it's quite misunderstanding. Very contrived.
Yeah,
it's
just
silly.
Frustrating. Yeah, frustrating. Because it could just get cleared up so easily.
Exactly.
But importantly, Baby is pissed off at her dad. So she goes to Johnny's cabin. He's shirtless, playing Otis Redding's, These Arms of Mine.
What a room, though. It's like a Scandi influenced hipster heaven. You'd pay about $3,000 a week for that in Shoreditch. It's an incredible room.
But I think the producers of Roadhouse saw that and went, we'll use this almost exact same scene 2 years later, whatever it was. Little cabin room, Otis Redding, These Arms of Mine. Nice lady is going to come into him, have sex with you. Happy days. So this scene, I mean, right, I think quite a lot about this scene, but let's see. So Eleanor Bernstein, this is what she says about the scene. She thinks this is the moral centre, the dead centre of this movie, not the moral centre. The feeling that Baby expresses, which is, I'm scared of walking out of this room and never feeling the rest of my whole life the way I feel when I'm with you. Mm. And she says, that moment in your life when you move one way or another, it's really beautiful what she says, if you focus your heart and your spirit, you can hold your life in your arms and make it do anything. Beautiful. And people, you know, something that people get. But I've always found it a bit off. I get the feeling. When Baby says that, I understand that. I understand that feeling for me and to project myself onto that feeling. But between her and Johnny, I mean, they dance, by which I mean they have sex. But it's, I don't know, I'm not a prude, but I feel like he kind of owes her because of the abortion money. And he says to her, it's very on the nose, he's like, I've never met anyone like you. And he's supposed to be awakened to his own sense of worth and what he could possibly achieve. And he's, to me, he could be any sexy dancer and he would service the same sort of narrative drive for Baby. Like, she's just met a good dancer and she's been, you know, she's kind of had to dance with him because of the abortion thing. So the power is a bit off. Like, does he have to put out to pay her back? Because also she could get him fired, and she's never said that to him, but she says it to Robbie, and it's really easy for her to say that I can get you fired, no problem. So by inference, she can get him fired, no problem. And so I just don't like... as a feminist, I believe in equality. And so I just want the power to be on a bit more of an equal footing before they do it, because then that would make it more attractive for me. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I also think he strikes me in this scene as someone who's not ready to embark on a big relationship. He's so filled with self-loathing and self-hatred. He doesn't really seem to me like someone who's in the right frame of mind to get together with a girl who's half his age. yeah, which is another weird aspect of the whole thing, is that Swayze was 35 when he made this, and he looks 35,
and he's hooking up. He does not look 35.
Oh, he does.
He's very leathery, and he's hooking up with a girl who's 17, 18. I really feel that in this scene, it's a bit. I feel a bit creepy.
You see, yeah. That's what I found. I thought that's enough for me for her dad, Jake, to have a problem with him. The fact that he does look too old for her when they're standing next to each other, which is a father, you'd be like, who's this? Who's this? This guy has lived, baby. He has lived too much for you.
He's playing someone in his mid-20s. Which isn't as bad, but still creepy. I can remember those blokes in their mid-20s that were, when I was sort of 17, that would hang around with the girls in our year, and you just think, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
But he's very open about it. For example, there's some pillow talk between them where... here's a tip for you. When the person you're with in bed asks you if you've had a lot of women because of your job, don't say... Well, when you come from the streets, you're suddenly up here, and these women, they're throwing themselves at you, and they smell so good.
They smell so good.
They really take care of themselves.
It's the smell, you see. He's powerless to the smell. What are you talking about, Johnny?
Johnny, shut up and dance. That is...
take your shirt off. Dance.
But he can still say, no, I haven't, because he's like, oh, these women, they take good care of themselves, they smell so good, but I don't sleep with them, just to be clear.
But I'm also glad there's a deleted scene from this sequence, or it's kind of a different way that they end up in bed together. And I'm glad they cut it, because I can remember Dirty Dancing, it seemed dangerous. And I remember... you know, Swayze, when he first heard about it, was worried it was going to be a porno, and the director was wanting to pull back from it being like a Porky's kind of film. He was concerned it would be like that. But the scene when they get together here is that they deleted is played to She's Like the Wind. They use that here, the Patrick Swayze song. And it is filthy for the whole song. They are dry humping with her just grinding on him. And it's very sexy, but I'm glad they decided to really pull back on the sex stuff. Yeah. And they even just pull away when they kiss.
This moment was a bit like the scene in Footloose where Kevin Bacon reads erotic fiction to Chris Penn. Carry on, Chris. He was grinding and grinding.
Is anyone else in a break? God.
I won't lie. I'm aroused and I've taken my top off again. There you go. Oh,
God. Anyway, so we're going to have a talent show in Act 3, which, as you know, is a personal favourite of mine, a big tick. But... for me, I mean, as much as I love this film, it kind of unravels a little bit here. So I think the script forces a low point between Johnny and Baby, and they fall out, but it's a bit contrived because she won't tell her dad about them. Johnny beats the shit out of Robbie. And then Johnny has this sort of awakening because he rejects Mrs. Pressman's advances, who's actually trying to buy him for sex. And he's like, no, Mrs. Pressman, I'm not going to do that. And Baby does eventually tell her dad. And there's nothing wrong with the beats, but I think the beats are in a bit of a weird order because it seems like Mrs. Pressman is framing Johnny because she's angry about the rejection, but then it turns out the wallets really were stolen and all of that. Like, it doesn't...
That's what I mean. It's very confusing, the Schumacher sub-story, because there's the bit earlier where she drops her handbag, Mrs. Schumacher, and one of them, Johnny or Baby, picks it up, and there's...
It's Penny and Baby help her with all the wallets.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I didn't pick up on that at all. I didn't. Oh. I don't think it was clear that those were stolen wallets, or there were more wallets than there should have been in her bag. It just looked like they were helping an older woman who dropped her bag. I didn't pick up on this theft thing.
No, you're not supposed to know it then. But then the reveal here, you're like, oh, of course, those were stolen wallets. Because it is weird that there are four wallets dropped all out of her bag.
It's weird that this elderly couple are master thieves.
I love it. Yeah. I think it's great because they're so sweet. They're the last people you'd expect. I think that's really great.
Yeah. And then we get a really big scene. Well, it feels like a big scene for me between Baby and Daddy, where she says she's sorry. And this is the thing that I've meant the whole way through about the new world colliding with the old, because he is crying as well. And it's very upsetting. But I think, and this might be a massive stretch, but the crying is because, so his type of power is finally undone, and it's his daughter who did it to him. And she took the spoils of his privilege, which is money, by exploiting his trust. But it was his blind spot in terms of like her naivety and her childlike nature. And it all went wrong with the abortion, and he fixed it. But she's saying to him, this is how it's going to be now. In this new world that's coming, we need people like you, but you will not call the shots. I will change the world in the way I see fit, not your way. And that's what you love about me, if you love me at all. And that's why they're both crying. It's not really just about what's happened, I think. Which is why I like this film.
I was reading a lot into it. I can see what you're saying, but it also does feel like just a dad crying because he's lost his daughter.
Maybe. But also then that sentiment is picked up. I love this. It's such a tiny thing, but I love it. Max Kellerman at the end of the season mournfully reflecting that the kids don't want to come to Kellerman's anymore, and they want to go to Europe, and they want 22 countries in 3 days, and they're not just following the path that their parents took. It's a little thing, but I think it just buttons for me all of this political stuff that's been like swirling around.
But doesn't that also enable them to set up a potential sequel, because he's lost them all to Europe, but then maybe because the dirty dancing explodes in front of everyone, there's potential for Kellerman's to come back next season, because the kids will want to come back if they are able to do that.
That's why that dance scene, the talent show, is important, because here's Johnny, nobody puts Baby in the corner, stupid thing to say, doesn't matter.
What is that line? Why is that? And obviously it's very famous, nobody puts Baby in the corner. And I was like, I'll finally get to see what it means in context. And it doesn't fucking make sense.
Here's a quote from Eleanor Bergstein about that line. She says, "It's not something I'm deeply committed to. It's not a great phrase." That's the only quote I can find from her about that line.
Well,
so I think
Jesus
confuses everyone about how that's become the sort of famous line.
He didn't want to do it. Patrick Swayze said, "I don't like this line. I don't want to do it," and had to be convinced to do it. It just doesn't make any sense. I think it's become famous because it's so weird.
Maybe, yeah. It is weird. She's not in a corner. Like you say, it would have been so easy to actually just put her in the corner just for one shot and be like, oh, that works. That's fine. Let's do that. God, now I can't even remember where I'm up to. I'm at the very end. You've thrown me. Right, talent show. Nobody puts Baby in the corner. They dance. She's amazing. He jumps off the stage, breaking his leg or whatever you now tell me. And then it's a musical moment, and I am not a fan of musicals, but his dance troupe sort of appear behind him, and they've got a routine, and it's fucking brilliant. And I don't care that it's hyper real. She does they do the lift. Amazing. But this scene, I mean, I think the payoff, you know, it's really important in a film like this that all the characters get their payoff, and it just about works. But I'm quite admiring of how quickly it just about works. So Daddy is talking to Penny, which means he doesn't hate her, and he's not saying, I regret getting involved with you and I don't want to talk to you after saving your life. He's accepted. He'll be part of this new world. Robbie is disgraced and sent packing. Johnny's given the seal of approval. Mum and Dad are having a dance. Lisa's happy. Baby and Johnny have had the time of their lives. She's Francis now. She's not a virgin. She knows her power. She can change the world. Johnny can go off to dance how he pleases. And all this dirty dancing means that Kellerman will get new people in next year. So it's like just wrapping up everybody super, super quick. Probably could be more powerful, but in terms of like doing it in 5 minutes, a really good job. Yeah.
Robbie needs something worse to happen to him. He's a bad guy. Bad guy, that Robbie. I'd like more than him not getting a tip from
massive
Mr. Houseman.
Envelope of cash.
Yeah, I mean, something worse, like his dick dropping off. That would be a better end for Robbie.
Now, the thing is, this last quote from me from Eleanor Bergstein from that Guardian interview, this is why everyone loves this film, Chris. So she says, what I feel now is that everyone has a secret dancer in them. Everyone believes they can do what Baby does. They can learn to dance. And you know what? You can. That is 100% what I believe about myself. And that's why I like this film so much, because I believe I can dance. And I know I can't, but I'm sure if someone taught me, I would be Baby, definitely. And a lot of people feel like that. And I'm the sort of person that I will dance. I'm right. So it's either the worst kind of dance or the best kind, depending on your mindset. I will always try. That's embarrassing for everybody around me, but I'll always give it a whirl.
Irrespective of the fact that I'm shit. How do you
feel about tap dancing? Because we could, I mean, maybe we could do it together.
If you want someone to come with you, I would be absolutely delighted. I think we'd be amazing. Amazing. And we can get top hats, so we can get canes.
All right. Baby steps.
Francis now. It's interesting. They did have a big dance planned for the end, like a big spectacular dance for the two of them. But when they were shooting it, they realised they needed to be steps that you've seen throughout the film combined, that it was nothing new that the audience hasn't seen before. To show that it's that moment where, I guess, as kind of what you're saying, Vicky, this is the moment where Baby gets everything right. Everyone's watching her. Everything she's learned all goes into this one moment and it all just comes off. And it is that, it's that moment of such, I guess, joy. And I found this finale similar to a Rocky movie in the way it all builds up to this finale and they build the tension and the excitement. And then you get that just that one moment of absolute ecstasy at the end.
Yeah. Jennifer Grey only did the lift once where he lifts her, and they got it in one take because Jennifer Grey was genuinely petrified.
Well, no, you've never tried to do it. Have you? Sorry, I think I've said this to you before. Have you honestly never been out hammered and given it a whirl?
Don't be stupid.
Have you not?
I have. What? Nobody.
No. Yeah. Have you?
Yeah.
What, are you the lifter or the liftee?
Unbelievably, I'm the liftee, which is why it's never happened. So I've been stood there drunk as a monkey, and it's like, this is a great idea. I can dance. Of course I can dance. And I've run at him, and then just at the last second, we've both gone, what are you doing? And just run around him. So
are you running at a stranger? Is there a stranger having a beer in a bar, and suddenly you come thundering towards him? going, are you ready?
Lift me.
Thundering.
Cheeky fucker.
Bloody rude.
That's not what I meant.
Unbelievable.
In terms of in the film, in the screen test, you can see them trying to do the lift and building and building until they actually succeed. And that's before they even got the roles. And then here, that behind the scenes footage, you're absolutely right, Alex. You can see how nervous she is having to do it in front of everyone, and she's having doubts. And you can even hear Swayze in this footage saying to her, trust me, trust these wrists.
Oh, yeah. I do, Patrick.
Yeah. Although, remember, they hadn't always been getting on. So, you know, you got to hope they were in a good place, because if they'd had an argument that morning, he's like, yeah, trust me, I got you. Don't you worry, Jennifer. I like the climax because I like the fact that Jake, Baby's dad, Jake, he doesn't actually apologize to Johnny after finding out that he was wrong.
That's
about
true, yeah.
The abortion, which I think is quite cool. He just says to him, when I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong. It's just like, Johnny's like, oh, apology accepted. No, I didn't apologize. I just said, when I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong, but I won't actually say sorry.
But he doesn't say he's wrong. He says, when I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong. That's not now.
You mean like now? No.
Yeah, exactly. No, not like, when I'm wrong. Yeah.
Jerry Orbach, who plays that role, he was a great Broadway star, like a big star. So I think it's kind of sad we never got to see him do his moves.
Mm. Oh, that's true, yeah. That's all I have. Do you want to do the bits? Do you have any more?
I have a quote for you. This is from Patrick Swayze's memoir, The Time of My Life. He says, I felt all along that Johnny should ultimately end up with Penny, as they were much more alike and a more realistic couple than Johnny and Baby. So that's what Swayze thought.
Yep. I think that's true. I think that's fine. I think he should sleep with baby because she needs to become a woman. And then it's like he's paid his debt. Whoa, hang on. Let me just check what I'm about to say. I think it's okay. So,
oh,
he's...
damn it. I thought I wanted you to blunder into that and then we could like use it as a trailer. Like, Vicky doesn't always get it right.
Look, you, I don't always have to be perfect to be able to have an opinion about something.
There you go.
But yeah, Penny and Johnny are a better match, but he can have this like romance with baby and then give her what she needs to take on the rest of the world and then go off with Penny and start a dance school or something and have loads of sex. That works.
Yeah. I'm happy with that.
Good. Right, okay, good.
Is that have you like, jumped ahead to your change? Is that your change?
No, I just thought of that. No, that's not my change. What was your best scene, Alex?
The first Dirty Dancing scene when they kick open those doors with those watermelons in their arms. And wow, I was Jennifer Grey's face. My face was her face. Her face was my face. I was like, holy smokes, that is Dirty Dancing. And then some.
Was your Chris? Face Jennifer Grey's face before or after the nose job?
Oh, come on, Chris.
Obviously not knowing who she really was before this movie, but obviously having that information. So that is the story, that she had this nose job and then never really worked as much as she did before having the nose job, which is...
Because no one knew she was.
Yeah.
Oh, did she look
said
that
she
different?
Called it the nose job from hell because it made her unrecognizable, which is such a strange thing to happen. I've never heard of that happening with anyone else, but it's absolutely true. I think she was in Friends in the early 90s and no one knew it was Jennifer Grey from Dirty Dancing because she does, it's made her look so different.
She looks completely different.
Mm. My scene, I'm going for the climactic dance sequence. It's obvious, but it really had me sort of cheering along, so love it.
Yeah, I liked it until the bit where she's on stage and Patrick Swayze and the rest of his dance troupe are kind of finger clicking towards her, and it just looked very Grease at that moment. It was a very, very Grease-like moment.
Kind of West Side Story, I think.
Right. Sorry, yeah, that's more like it. Yeah. Which is, I know that you said you didn't mind it despite it being hyper-real, V, but for me it was a bit too, like, in a moment that is quite authentic for considering, you know, how
what's going on,
staged it is. It does feel like authentic and realistic until that moment.
Yeah. Oh. It's weird because I really hate Grease and I really hate West Side Story, but I do really like that end scene and I like it more because of that moment. It's very odd. It just works. So it's my best scene as well.
It's Time of Your Life. Does that sound like a song that would have been released in the 60s?
No.
Oh, someone's going for one of my changes.
Oh, okay.
I'll say it now. Ever since the first time I saw this, I've been annoyed with the anachronisms in the music in such a modern sound to Hungry Eyes and She's Like the Wind, and particularly The Time of My Life. And I don't like the song anyway. And I know it won the Oscar and everyone adores that song, but I think it's an absolutely soulless song and it's totally out of place. Like, they should have got a classic from the era like they did elsewhere, or at least record it with the instruments and the production of the time to make it sound like one of these Dirty Dancing rock and roll numbers. But it really spoils that ending a little bit. It really does.
Mm. Okay, good. Good. I'm glad I brought that up. Sorry,
well,
glad that actually changed.
Said before, who wrote that song? What was he called? I can't remember. But he didn't want to do it because he was told the plot of the film and he thought it sounded like a porno. And he's like, I don't associate with that. I don't want to do it. And he was having a baby and he's like, I don't want anything to do with this. I'm out. And then he was convinced to come back in and recorded it, but still, it still sounds like a porno to me. And then, you know, won everything.
Yeah.
Right, that's thrown me. You've done your change. Do you want to do your change, Alex? And we're just sort of, you know.
Are we going to do MVWs in the middle, or are we just going to... Kenny Ortega. Mine's Kenny Ortega. He's brilliant. There you go.
Okay, mine's the soundtrack.
The dancing, yep. Great.
Yours, Chris?
I would agree with the soundtrack if they took off those blooming pop songs. but they did introduce me to so much great music when I was a kid, like all those you know, rock and soul numbers. But now I've got to go Patrick Swayze, haven't I? This film's nothing without him. Anyone else in that role, I don't think this film's a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
And it's because he loves dance and because he was a dancer, like the commitment like that he puts into the dancing, he is in those moments not really acting, he's just dancing. And it's obviously very realistic and very authentic. And you can tell like his passion for dance screams through the screen. It's amazing.
Mm. So what would you change,
Alex? I've got an honorary mention, sorry, before I do my change, an honorary mention to Jane Brooker, who plays Baby's sister. I didn't really do much after this film. I just think that scene where she's rehearsing for the talent show and she performs that song, Hula Hannah, that she actually she co-wrote herself, is hilarious. She is so funny in that scene.
She was a stand-up comic. That's how they found her. And you can I didn't know that watching it, but you can totally see it when you know that she's got really good comedy timing.
Yeah. You asked me for a change, didn't you, Victoria? It's a little change, kind of silly. I just don't know why Johnny smashes his car window when he locks his keys inside.
Yeah, really weird.
I'm like, what are you? That's your car. Why
He's
are you
a
doing
wild
that?
Man. He's wild. There's going to be glass all over the seat that baby sits on.
It's the
that's 60s. How wild he is.
It's the 60s. You can break into a car now, like in 2021. I'm pretty sure in the 60s you can get a coat hanger down the side of that door and unlock it. And I get the fact it's raining and it's like, oh, it's raining really heavily. They're not made of salt. Like, they can survive a bit of rain. So what a silly thing to do. What a stupid thing to do.
It's a really weird moment. I'd forgotten about it, actually. And it's like, it is there for him to be like, hey, this guy's capable of anything. But it's very, very odd. Mine is a really little thing as well, and it's back to Lisa, baby's sister. The Lisa is going to shag Robbie storyline is set up like a ticking bomb, like something bad is going to happen if Lisa shags Robbie. And then it's swerved at the last minute. She goes to his cabin. He's having sex with someone else, I think Mrs. Pressman. And so Lisa's like, oh, I'm not going to do that. And nothing happens because of that. So I would just augment that storyline a bit so that, I don't know, either Lisa and baby hugely fall out and she goes off with Robbie and she loves his individualism and it sets the sisters apart, or just something happens to get Lisa out of that situation, or she does shag Robbie and it's terrible and all the rest of it. But it feels like a big deal and then it just disappears in like 3 seconds.
Mm. Agreed. I've got a new change, if I may.
Sure. Oh,
but I think it's quite an important one. So this is the story of baby starting out a teenage girl and ending the film a woman.
Mm.
We find out her real name is Frances, and even when he hears that, Johnny says, oh, that's a real grown-up name. So why the hell, in her moment of maturity when he walks up to her, does he call her baby rather than Frances? There's such an opportunity there for him to give her her grown-up name and take her on stage. So although we don't like the corner bit of it, the baby bit of it is the thing I have a problem with. It should be nobody puts Frances in the corner because she's emerging.
Literally every part of that line is wrong. There's no corner and she should be called Frances. It should be nobody puts Frances against a wall.
That sounds like something else.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. Yeah.
Well, it depends. That's not. It's something else. Right, that's it. We're done.
You done?
Yep.
All right, that is Dirty Dancing finished. It is time now. Remember, it went up against Footloose. Let's do the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Ooh, these were your choices, Christopher. Who would you like to go first?
Oh, it's hardly need to do it this week. I feel like I know where we're all going, but why don't you kick us off, Alex, by telling us why you prefer Dirty Dancing?
I didn't even go that far. I've never seen either of these films, so with no nostalgia, no rose-tinted glasses, no preconceived ideas, one is simply a much better film, and that film is called Dirty Dancing.
Victoria.
Yes, what Alex said. I've only written Dirty Dancing because Footloose would have had to do a hell of a job to like oust Dirty Dancing in my mind. Anyway, even though I think Dirty Dancing is incredible, but it's not perfect, like everything. But Footloose is just too disjointed. It's really weird in bits. There are characters that pop up that you've never even met that are really important. And also it's the dancing. I did really fall like into this nostalgic idea of this sort of the rose tinted view of the 60s and the Rockettes and all of that. And that did have a very powerful draw. Dirty Dancing, always.
Good.
Chris?
Good. Well, if I'm honest, I went into this thinking I was going to pick Footloose. I really did. But I feel like my judgment of Dirty Dancing has really been coloured by their use of Time of My Life at the end of the film. Like, it's really annoyed me for the past 30 years. Hmm. But this time, you know, watching it a couple of times this week, I kind of took a step back and said, you can't blame everything on that one song. And like you guys, I agree, it's a much, much better film. And I'm now annoyed that he calls her baby, not Francis, as well. So there's two things I'm annoyed about at the end. But in spite of that flaw, it's a much better movie. So obviously, 3 for 3, Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
Well done. Dirty Dancing is the winner this week. It is unanimous. Let's see what the poll says when it goes on Twitter. But I'm pretty sure it will be a similar story there. That's what I'm calling. I'm calling Dirty Dancing as the poll. Obviously, a few weeks ago, Chris said it was definitely be Coming to America that beat out Crocodile Dundee in the poll. But that wasn't the case. That wasn't the case. It was Crocodile Dundee that won. You know, I'm a big fan of the poll and talking about the poll. Really interests me, that poll. It is at Clash Pod on Twitter. If you like polls, it's a lot of fun. right then, clue time. Victoria, you gave us a clue for next week's movies on Monday. Remind us what that clue was and indeed what films we are doing.
So the clue was justices giving the people what they want. And that means inevitably that, Alex, you are watching Justice League from 2017.
Oh,
and Chris, you are watching Zack Snyder's Justice League from 2021. All of it.
Controversial.
Enjoy your 17 hours of movie watching, Chris. That'll be fun for me.
I can't believe you're going to have to take notes on all of that. I'm so glad it's my week to choose.
I'm sure a fair bit of the notes will be copy and pasted from the Monday show, but we'll see. We'll see. Who knows? Yeah, who knows what's different and what's the same?
Yeah. I am really interested. I really hope it's good. Just like for, I'm not that invested in it emotionally, but I'm fully aware that a lot of people are.
And yes, and I've really been attacked by those people online, so I don't know how I feel about this whole thing.
I just want them to be happy. It seems like so long. It seems like this has been going on forever, and we're still all pretending that there was a Snyder cut originally, and that they haven't just made a new movie.
Alex, save it for next week.
Right,
you're already given your verdict for next week.
No. All right, then. That is us done for this week. If you haven't, please do subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at ClashPod, on Instagram at ClashPod. We're doing Justice League next week. We'll be back to talk about the first Justice League on Monday. Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.